Welcome. At a time when the whole world is worried about tariffs impacting trade, there's one country where trade growth has been surging. That's China. UBS Investment Bank's EM strategists, economists, and equity analysts have written a major new report detailing the consequences this export surge from China has on the rest of the world. Could this be reflationary or quite the opposite? Here to discuss with me the main findings of this report is its chief author and EM cross-asset strategist, Manik Narayan. Manik, you've described China's trade performance as amounting to a second shock to global trade in the last 40 years. What do you mean by that? What was the first shock and what is the second shock?
Right. So over the last 2 years, China's export volumes are up about 20%, while over the same period, the rest of the world's exports are up by just 3%. So this is the widest margin of Chinese dominance in global exports since 2002 to 2005, just after it joined the WTO back in December 2001. That period is famously referred to as the first China shock to global trade.
Right.
Part of this is due to low competitive prices. Last year, China saw about a 7% drop in its export prices compared to no change in the rest of the world. So the real renminbi has effectively depreciated back to 14-year lows. That's imposing a disinflationary force on the rest of the world. The other key issue here is that China's trade has become increasingly imbalanced as its strong export volumes aren't being effectively recycled into domestic demand or imports that benefit the rest of the world, especially the manufacturing world. So while I mentioned before that China's export volumes are up about 20%, over the same period, its imports are completely flat. So this is very different from the first China trade shock when its import volumes were growing closer to 20% annually. By the way, this isn't just about one sector. We get a lot of questions about EVs and autos, but EVs, for instance, are only about 1% of China's total exports. So they only explain about 20% of the growth in China's trade surplus over the last 3 years. So, you know, we do think of this as an important shock to the global trade system and one that's potentially as important as US tariffs, but one that isn't being discussed as much.
Well, that's quite a big statement. I mean, to call it a shock. So we'll explore that more. But can I just ask you, couldn't this just be about front loading? I mean, everybody knows that tariffs are coming and China and US are large trading partners. Why don't we just front load imports from China and therefore China's exports relative to the rest of the world go up? So couldn't this just be front loading?
You know, we wouldn't deny that there's an element of front loading, but we really don't think that is the dominant story here at all. Three reasons I'll give. The first is that, you know, we very clearly see that China is making deeper and faster inroads into final EM domestic demand. For example, if you take a country like Mexico, China now accounts for about 20% of the final auto market. These are Chinese assembled cars sold in Mexico, so it's nothing to do with transshipment. If you look at Indonesian car sales, they're down about 5% in May year on year, but they're up about 150% as far as the Chinese brands are concerned. So that's not about front loading. That's about genuine increased export penetration. The report goes into some detail from using data from the China consumer team on the same story in ASEAN household appliances. The second thing is that, you know, this export surge really began back in early 2023. So we do think that's, you know, it's been running quite a long time to be reasonably explained just by front loading, in our view. And third, while admittedly off its peaks, you know, we're still seeing that manufacturing FAI is growing at a pretty robust pace in China. It's grown at 7.5% year on year in the first half of this year. Credit flows into manufacturing are growing at 2x the rate of 2015 to 19 as well. Purchase of equipment and upgrading is running at 17%. So it's hard to marry that with the idea that there was just some sudden rush of exports ahead of US tariff announcements. It seems to us that there's still quite a good pipeline of future export supply ready to come. So look, some moderation export growth does seem reasonable in the second half of the year, but But we really do think that this is much more than just front loading. And we think that the market may be surprised by how resilient Chinese exports have proved to be.
Right. So it's structural. It's not cyclical. It's not a one-off. I mean, you describe it as a shock. What is it, a disinflationary shock? It seems to me you're saying. So what kind of an impact do you think this is having on the rest of the world?
Yeah. So there are some sectors that will no doubt benefit from China expanding its investment into those markets. You know, certain parts of ASEAN, for example, we'll see that. But so far, the macro data is sending a pretty clear warning signal in our view that rather than this lifting growth in the rest of EM, this is a challenge to growth in large parts of EM. For example, we're seeing that manufacturing as a share of GDP in EM ex-China is sitting right at its COVID lows. So it's as bad as it was at the height of the COVID disruptions. New orders are actually weakening in the manufacturing sector. And we're seeing that EM PMIs are again starting to underperform those in the developed world. We're seeing decelerating FDI inflows into most of EM. EM ex-China is seeing FDI as a proportion of GDP sitting near 20-year lows. And rather than businesses and consumers getting a big wind in their sails from lower inflation and looking to spend more, we seem to be seeing that actually credit impulses in most of EM ex-China are still very, very subdued. Exports are still unable to keep pace with China. There is some evidence of deflation in manufacturing margins in some parts of Asia, specifically Thailand, Malaysia, Japan. We do see CapEx falling in certain manufacturing sectors, chemicals, materials, household products. So we can't attribute all of that to China's rising supply, but it does look to be a contributing factor. So the report also goes through some stock screens to show exactly who in EM and Europe is vulnerable to this. But yeah, you know, so far the evidence does seem to be pointing towards a correlation between countries that are taking in more imports from China and weaker real GDP performance, weaker CapEx performance.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but you've basically mentioned most EM countries. Is this an EM problem that China is gaining market share in those countries, or is this also a DM problem, just briefly?
So we're seeing that almost all of the increase in Chinese exports over the last 2 to 3 years has been going into the rest of EM. The rest of EM now accounts for nearly 60% of China's trade surplus. About 3 years ago, that number was below 50%. So it does appear that they're making stronger inroads into EM demand. Having said that, there are certain sectors in Europe that we do worry about. Some parts of the autos sector, for example, healthcare equipment. Graham Doyle's done a report on that. And chemicals, there's still very strong supply coming out. So it is, I would say, a bigger concern in EM, especially because not all of EM is offering the kind of fiscal impulse to combat this the way that Europe is. So we are particularly concerned about EM.
Okay. But what about China itself as well? I mean, you're basically saying, Manik, I think that there's this massive increase in supply, which is going to create pressure on margins in the rest of the world, particularly EM. But what about China's own margins? Shouldn't this be deeply negative for Chinese equities?
So that's less clear for a few reasons. The first is that from a valuation perspective, China's one of the very few parts of the major EM space, which is still trading at a discount to its history. And that's despite much lower bond yields over the last few years. So equity risk premium is well above historical averages. The other interesting story here is that in complete contrast to the macro economy, where we're still seeing very rapid increases in manufacturing CapEx. We're seeing debt to GDP, if you look at the TSF data, still rising at about a 20% annualized rate. That's not what we see at the listed company level. We're actually seeing that there's a lot of CapEx discipline. And of course, you know, there's the index composition shift. So relative to the past, you know, much more internet stocks, which have shown a lot of resilience over the last 3 or 4 years, both to the property downturn and evidence of overcapacity in several manufacturing sectors. In fact, MSCI China on a cash basis is showing some of the best balance sheets across EM. There's a stock screen again in the report from the China team that shows quite a few companies that they are very positive on, particularly in the autos, construction, consumer, company, supply chains that are going to do quite well out of China's bigger push into the rest of EM.
Okay, Monica, and because we're running out of time, just in a minute, what are the asset implications for the world that you look at for emerging markets of this second China shock?
So the first is we think that, you know, we need to play the optimism around dollar weakness and what that means for EM much more selectively than in the past. We think that this dollar sell-off that we've seen has really been about risk premium on US assets rising and the US catching down, whereas in previous cycles where EM has really benefited from dollar weakness, you've generally seen those were periods where EM growth itself was picking up. This time, that's much less clear to us. So we are quite selective within EM equities. We like some big domestic markets with cheap valuation that have room to cut rates aggressively, the likes of Brazil, for example. We see some small parts of the European market, like Greece or Hungary, being very well shielded by the fiscal stimulus and the RRF and so on. But this is not, in our view, an obvious environment for EEM outperformance across the board. In FX, you know, what China effectively may be doing here is, you know, compromising the price elasticity of exports. So currencies weaken and their exports stay weak. So we think currencies need to stay weaker for longer against the euro, the yen, the dollar. So we actually have a few recommendations to be outright short EM currencies against DM, not necessarily always against the dollar. And the clear winner for us is local debt. We're still a lot more constructive, I think, than the consensus on local debt. UBS is seeing deeper monetary policy easing cycles than the market in about 75% of the major EM space. And we think that EM local debt will offer a increasingly attractive diversification opportunity for investors looking to diversify away from US rates as the fiscal outlook there deteriorates. We think that local currency debt in EM will continue to surprise on the upside.
Okay, that's very interesting, Monik. So just at a time when many investors are worried about inflation, particularly in the US, but also in other countries like UK and Australia, your research is suggesting that there's a disinflationary shock coming out of China. That's fascinating. Monik, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Monik.
This content has been prepared by UBS AG, its subsidiaries and or affiliates, and is purely informational in nature. It is not investment research and does not contain an investment recommendation nor investment or professional advice. It is not an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, and you should seek your own financial, tax, and legal advice before engaging in any such activity. UBS has no responsibility to you in relation to this content. It has no regard to your personal circumstances or investment objectives, and receiving it does not imply any form of client relationship with UBS for any legal, regulatory, or tax purpose. This content is not intended for distribution into any jurisdiction where to do so would be contrary to law or regulation. UBS does not accept any liability over the content of such material or reliance upon any information contained herein. The views and opinions expressed by any guest speaker or third party are not those of UBS. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over any such views and opinions expressed by such persons. This content is the valuable intellectual property of UBS, and UBS specifically prohibits the redistribution of it in whole or in part without its prior written permission. UBS 2024, the key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. All rights reserved.